It's freezing outside. If you haven't been out there, don't do it. It's like was 20-something when I left. I don't know, Dave. You called it last week. You said this is all going to come to a happy little ending or an unhappy little ending with this weather.
Yeah, we're going to pay for it. For all the warm weather we had in September, beginning of November, we're definitely paying for it today.
Oh, God. And I think it's the beginning of the end. You look at the forecast, and the next whole week is in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And then I just don't see it ever going back up.
Nope, not anymore. I felt so sorry for those people at the lighting parade here on Michigan Avenue, the Magnificent Mile, where Mickey and Minnie were lighting up Michigan Avenue. People were freezing.
Yeah.
Poor kids.
Poor kids. But for Mickey, you'd do anything, really.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it beats going to Orlando.
This is true. And going to actually Disneyland, which I'll never do again.
Cheaper.
It's cheaper, and it's a lot less stressful. I'll deal with the 20-something degrees than to deal with Disneyland again.
All the kids running around and screaming, having a blast.
Well, it's just so many people, you know? It's crazy. It's not really a vacation. Every time I go, I come back with post-traumatic Disney disorder. I'm sure people relate. As a matter of fact, let us know. 312-981-7200. Do you suffer from post-Disneyland disorder where you come back and your reality is twisted and you don't want to see people for a year?
It's a workout on its own.
It is.
Because you walk practically all day.
You have to be in good shape for sure to take on Disney, like with the kids. I mean, I got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. It's a marathon.
And then with the lines and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on Disney.
Hey, speaking of shows, your show last night, holy.
Yeah.
You know,
how about that? Good transition, Dave. Look at
I
you.
Was, yeah, we're, you're working you on the those, word aren't show.
You? He's like, you're just waiting for a word.
The thing is that I got to admit, it's the first time I saw the Downtown Shabby show, finally.
You did? It's the first time after 6 episodes?
Well, I would see it online. I would see it online.
Come on now.
On the FYI.com, I would see it online. I would see you and your wife, Sherry.
You can download it on Apple and you can iTunes. You could download the FYI app and watch it. So there's really no excuse, Dave.
I'm
actually a little mad at you right now.
I don't know if it was the most difficult show for you or the most challenging, because I found this soundbite and I'm like, whoa, I got to ask Frank about this.
I am a collector of many things. I don't want to say I'm a collector of a certain thing. I'm a collector of all things.
Order?
No, a collector? You name it, man.
Yeah.
I collect it. I'm excited to meet Frank and Sherry. I'm interested to get some new eyes on this and see what they say.
We're optimistic this can get done the right way, the way that it'll allow us to build our family.
Yeah, that was the couple from last night's episode of Downtown Shabby on FYI Network, which, by the way, now A&E Network picked up our show and runs every Saturday morning as well at 10 a.m. This week, they ran 2 back-to-back episodes of Downtown Shabby on A&E. So if you miss it on Saturday night, you can watch it Saturday morning from the following week. And they rerun them. It's actually pretty cool. The whole day is dedicated to Downtown Shabby, which is nice. So this couple was a great couple, James and Holly, very creative. Holly's like a blogger and a thrift shopper and you know, crafter type of gal. But the challenge, if you didn't see the episode last night, and we welcome all discussions if you want to talk about it, 312-981-7200, if you've seen the episode last night, have some questions about it, was to design without a design.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge.
And this was in the Chicago Ukrainian village, right?
Yeah, this was in Ukrainian village, 2-flat. And but the whole thing is, as a designer, you usually have some direction. You usually have some inspiration, some color. This one was, don't make anything match. Don't take leads on any color. Don't give me a design. I don't want it to feel like a design. So that's an awkward challenge. But you know what? I always love a challenge. And I think if you've seen the episode and you've seen the reveal at the end of the show, that I think we crushed it.
We just, you know what I'm sharing as we speak on our social media for WGN Radio, the link to the last night's episode from the FYI Network in case somebody wants to check it out.
Yeah. You can always, like I said, you can catch the reruns of if you missed it this week, Saturday mornings on A&E. You can watch this last Saturday night's episode as well. And then House Beautiful Magazine covers the show every week, and they post all of the befores and afters on their website on housebeautiful.com. If you just Google housebeautiful.com/downtownshabby, you'll see all of the amazing episodes. We're actually on our final 2 already. Can you believe it, Dave?
I don't know how you can do it. At least they see you more relaxed. Every Sunday you would run in here rushing and having to go do a reveal. And you had your...
I missed a couple Sundays because of the television show. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Listen, I love doing radio. Like, I love this station. I love WGN. I love you. I love this microphone.
But, you know, you got to grow. You make us look good if you're on TV too, Frank. So you got to do that.
I appreciate that, Dave. Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, I miss it when I don't do it. So I'm glad to be back in the saddle, not have to worry about missing this show for any TV for, you know, the next couple of weeks, at least.
It's about growing.
Until season two starts, and then it'll start all over again. But this year, I'm putting in my contract, there's no bump in this show.
No more.
Because we have amazing guests. I mean, like, for instance, today we're talking all things winterizing the house because of this brutal cold that we're feeling. It's snap time. It's like, okay, wake up. Got to get the house ready. We have the folks from Lindeman Chimney here. Eric Nunez is joining us. He's a senior supervisor and safety director. We're talking about how important it is to really clean those chimneys out and how often you should get them done, when you should get your chimney inspected. I'm due for a chimney inspection, no doubt. And much more about your chimney and how to keep it cool for the winter. Cool, what I mean is operating cool. And then we're talking with the folks at University of Illinois as they celebrate the Kane County Master Gardener Award. And we actually have, we're going to have, a room full of master gardeners. This is where you play the epic music behind me, Dave.
And you know what? For those that have questions about their lawns this winter, they can definitely answer that as well.
From the master gardeners.
Yes, they do so many hours. I believe it's 100 hours.
I'm waiting for the epic music behind me. This should be like Paramount music. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, exactly. And then at 2:35, we're talking about this product and Frank's fave called the Matador's Pocket Blanket. It's mysterious.
I wonder if this is what the U.S. Army uses.
It must be. It's what the Green Beret carry around when they're in the mountains of Nicaragua.
And it turns into a keychain.
Shh, don't give too much away.
Okay,
I'm giving way too much away. And at 2:47, it's cocktail time. It's the end of the show. So we always round it out with a little salute. And John Pascavin, I'm saying that right, Pascavin, he's with Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits, is coming in studio. And he's bringing three different samples and recipes to use. One is just a nod to our Chicago Cubs world champions. It's called the Cubby Blue Drink. And he's going to share with us how to make that. And we're talking about getting that house ready for winter. And one of the places you tend not to think about is your chimney, right? And you should be thinking about that first, actually, because there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong there. And you want to make sure it's clean. You want to make sure it's functioning properly, especially if it is a functioning fireplace. So joining me from Lindeman Chimney Company is Eric Nunez. He's a senior supervisor and safety director. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, sure. Welcome to the show. So, hey, you got any good Thanksgiving plans before we get into business here?
Spending lots of time with family. It's a busy time of year for us, so the break to sit down and enjoy family time is well deserved at this time of year.
No cleaning chimneys then. Right?
No, a day off of work.
Cleaning plates is what's going to happen right about then.
Well, I'm sure we'll eat plenty.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about Lindeman Chimney. How did the company get started?
Lindeman Chimney started in 1969. Gary Lindeman was a Winnetka fire captain. In his off-duty time, he was cleaning gutters. It was kind of one of the things that Gary did was he always found a way to make money. So he was always comfortable up on roofs, always comfortable on ladders. So he started cleaning people's gutters. And while up there one day, someone said, "Hey, well, as long as you're up there, can you clean my fireplace?" And Gary was never one to turn people down. So
what goes into cleaning the fireplace and the chimney? I mean, because actually you bring up a good point as we talk about getting the home ready for winter with this ridiculous cold that just snapped on us. Gutters is definitely at the top of the list. You should definitely clean out the gutters. But why the chimney?
Chimney is very important. It exhausts a lot of things that you don't want back in your home. There's a lot of byproducts of combustion, whether you're burning wood or burning gas. You need to get all of those fumes and byproducts of burning safely out of the home.
Yeah. And you know, what would be a telltale sign from the inside that you should definitely clean out your chimney?
When you have a wood-burning fireplace, you see soot, creosote, that builds up. And once it gets above an eighth of an inch thick, so if you see it physically starting to kind of like bubble, crust up, it's definitely a good time to have it swept out.
How about odor-wise?
Odor-wise, if you start to smell your fireplace, you should never smell it when you're using it. A lot of people say, I love the smell of my fireplace, but you should never actually smell it inside of your home. But when you're in the summertime, if you smell it like you're at a campfire and there hasn't been a fire in 6 months, also a good indication to get your fireplace not only swept but inspected to make sure that everything is in safe condition.
Okay. And then you guys go, do you have a protocol? Like, what's your protocol? When you're, say I'm your client, right? And I'm like, all right, Eric, come on out.
Sure.
What's the first thing you're doing?
First thing we do before we even assume that the fireplace needs to be clean is we're going to look everything over. So all of our cleanings comes with a safety inspection, and a lot of times people may think they need their fireplace cleaned and it just needs to be inspected. So we're always going to go through just checking everything out before we get into anything, making sure your fireplace actually needs to be cleaned. And a lot of times it can just be inspected without actually needing to be cleaned.
And is this one of those things you would like urge a DIY thing to do? I mean, it seems like it's like electrical and plumbing to me.
It is a very specific thing.
I don't do that.
And
right.
I think Mary Poppins may have given the chimney industry a bad rap where there's just guys singing and dancing on roofs and running brushes up and down, but it's a very specific trade. So even with
Mary Poppins was all about chimney cleaning?
If I had a dollar for every Mary Poppins joke I got, I would probably be very well off.
It's been so long since I've seen the movie, I forgot.
Yeah, but it's not really, I mean, if you're physically doing the sweeping, you in theory could do it yourself, but the most important part of having your fireplace maintained is the inspection, which is something a homeowner is not going to do. So with every one of our cleanings, we are also running a camera up to basically do a chimney colonoscopy, if you will, because the most vital important aspects of your fireplace are on the inside that you're not able to see with just looking out with the flashlight or looking down from the top, and you physically have to see inside of there. So that is something that is a skilled trade in itself.
What is the weirdest thing you find in chimneys when you're inspecting?
Well, we found dead ducks, squirrels,
dead
bats.
Ducks.
Beer cans up on top of smoke shelves.
Wait, in a residential home, you're finding beer cans
a
chimney?
So whether it's from little Johnny who was trying to hide things from his parents,
Johnny.
Or someone when they were building it 100 plus years ago, you never quite know what you're going to find inside of a fireplace.
Interesting. The duck thing, though, that's odd. It's big.
I've seen a duck inside of someone's furnace vent.
And so it's your job to yank them out, huh?
It is.
Jeez.
It is, as they say.
Do you have little like little claw tools that you use?
Actually have, and that's where if you're kind of going from a do-it-yourself, you could physically sweep it. But once it comes to obstruction removal, any of those things, there are specific tools for the chimney industry that really only those chimney professionals have.
So if you're getting the smell of roast duck in your house, you know you might have a duck stuck in your chimney.
It's not a good sign.
Right now, we're talking to Eric Nunez from Lindemann Chimney Service, who has four girls, man. How old are your kids?
12, 10, 4, and 2.
12, 10, 4, and 2. Oh, I feel for you.
I feel more so for my amazing wife. She does a great mom.
God bless her, you, and those kids. That's great. And you manage to clean 1,000 chimneys a week. That's fantastic.
We try.
You try. So we left off talking about some of the dangers of not inspecting your fireplace. And one of the top of your list, and folks, by the way, if you have questions for Eric, if you have questions about your chimney, if it's not functioning properly, if you think you should get it inspected, now's the time to ask these questions. 312-981-7200. You can also text them in as well at the same number, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Be happy to help you out. What is the number one red flag that when somebody should jump on an inspection?
Smell can be one of them, particularly in the summertime. You get a lot of, it smells like I'm in a campfire, but I'm in my living room. And that can typically be from a negative air pressure. Some of those problems can be more obvious in the summertime when you have attic fans that are running or pulling an excessive amount of air outside of the home. And it really brings in that smell that says, oh, my fireplace is dirty. There can be other issues from water infiltration that kind of compound that and make that smell worse.
Yeah.
And kind of almost an epidemic in the fireplace chimney is now a lot of furnaces are going to direct vent, meaning they used to vent through the chimney. Now they're pulled out. At that time, the flue for that appliances, because typically you still have your water heater that's venting through there, gets orphaned, or the main source of heat is pulled out. That leaves a significantly oversized flue that appliance can also not draft correctly, that can come back into the home. You can also get condensation issues that transfer over to the adjacent fireplace flue and cause damage. So if it's been a number of years since the fireplace was used, but things have been changed to the chimney itself or modified, updated, you know, you need to still have an inspection done before you use the fireplace just to confirm that the fireplace still is in operable condition, because sometimes you have those changes and you don't even notice that the flue lining started falling apart or little pieces that I didn't realize were coming down.
Well, speaking of little pieces, when you start to see brick deterioration, what is that a sign of?
It's water that is infiltrating the chimney, and then in the wintertime that moisture freezes. So sometimes it can be cracks in the chimney crown, which is the concrete slab that goes at the top of the chimney. Sometimes the way masons form those crowns, it should have an inch and a half an overhang. So when the water is shed away from that crown, it doesn't go down the side of the chimney. A lot of times shortcuts will be taken where they instead of having it formed with that overhang, it's actually shorter than the actual chimney. So water loves to build up right there. And as soon as it has a little crack, the wintertime, that water gets in there, it freezes, and it's a downward spiral of water getting in. And that water starts to pop those bricks. You see those little chunks come down on the outside. Also, the clay flue lining on a masonry fireplace can also spall, and those little pieces will end up inside of your firebox.
Whatever you said sounds scary.
None of it is good.
No.
And this is the most important part of being proactive and doing your annual inspection, is making sure that everything is in good condition. A lot of those repairs can be easily done and inexpensively done. It's when they go on for 10, 15 plus years, and that it really spirals into some expensive repairs.
Sure. And we're getting some texts coming in, some questions. And if you have folks, if you have questions, 312-91-7200, questions about your chimney maintenance, a weird smell coming from the chimney, give us a call, because we found ducks, we found beer cans, and many other objects that we can't talk about on the radio. But here's a question from the 312. Do gas log fireplaces need to be cleaned?
More often than not, gas fireplaces do not need to be cleaned. They are designed to burn relatively clean to kind of maintain or get that yellowish color. You do kind of burn the gas on a dirtier side, which can produce some carbon. But really, and this is a great question, because most people who have gas logs or gas sets think just because I'm burning gas, it's safe. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions that we have.
Why?
Is you still have to exhaust all the byproducts of combustion. So even with burning natural gas and the way it's burned, it still can, you know, produces carbon dioxide. And if that carbon dioxide gets recombusted, it turns into carbon monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
When you still have all those defects in the flue system that you would notice more so with burning wood, you still have to get all those fumes out. And people always will say, or not always, but commonly will say, it's a fake fire. If you stick your hand in there, I guarantee you will not think it's fake.
Oh, you'd feel it.
So you still have to have all of the heat retention properties of a wood-burning fireplace with gas logs. So a common misconception is that, yeah, we don't have to have it inspected or cleaned, which for the cleaning aspect is fairly true, maybe every 10, 15 years.
What does a cleaning cost?
A cleaning is $289, and that comes with a full inspection. So we're looking at everything on the roof, inside of the fireplace. We're doing our chimney colonoscopy, where we're running our camera up to verify that everything on the internal portion of that fireplace system is in safe and operable condition.
Okay. So if you see a deterioration in brick, what is the protocol for that?
Give us a call and we'll come out and get an inspection done to see, you know, what's going on, what caused the problems, what we need to do to make sure this problem is resolved and doesn't come back and come down the road.
Cool. And then what about some new materials that you guys are seeing in the world of chimneys? Things like aluminum, steel, iron, copper, brick, and stone.
Well, you know, actually ceramic is something that's coming on as a replacement. Really, if you kind of think about masonry fireplaces, they're built almost the same way they were 100 plus years ago. So really, stainless is something that's replacing clay terracotta tiles. And, you know, terracotta tiles are subject to moisture deterioration.
Are we talking on the interior or are we talking about decorative exterior?
On the interior. There are some decorative aspects you can add to the top of the chimney with copper. And really,
in its form of flashing?
Flashing some decorative shrouds to give it, it's like a crown jewel, if you will, where you can really make a statement with your chimney as well. And that's becoming very popular, especially a lot of new high-end construction. The chimney pots, the very fancy-looking things at the very top, well, they can also be found in copper or a lot of various materials.
Do you guys get into the finishing business of chimneys in that manner?
We do. We're more so of the service restoration industry, but we do that as well.
Your company's national now, right? You guys are selling product all over the place and servicing the entire country.
We are. Our service base is Chicagoland. We go from south side of Chicago to Milwaukee to Lake Geneva to Aurora. So we have a pretty wide service industry. We've got guys that live, you know, all throughout that region, so we go all over. And we're also a national parts distributor. So we have Atlanta, New York, and Chicago-based supply warehouses as well. So we also supply materials to the entire chimney industries as well.
That's neat, man. I love that it's such a homegrown story, too. Gary Lindemann, up on the roof, cleaning gutters, decides to, you know, gets an opportunity to clean some chimneys and turns it into a multi-million-dollar company. That's just awesome, man.
Made in America.
Good company to work for, huh?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's great. Good for you, Eric. Proud of you, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's fantastic. So any last-minute tips for winter that we should be thinking about with our chimneys?
I mean, the biggest thing I would just say is don't assume your fireplace is safe to go. Always have it inspected before you use it. You know, you're having a fire inside of your home. And really, a safe fireplace is a controlled fire. And when you don't have those safety measures in place, you've got compromised parts of your system, you're really taking that control out and you're just having a fire inside of your home. So really take the time to think about what you're doing before you engage in it. And, you know, having a fire inside of your home is something that you really need to make sure you know what you're doing before you do it. And we're always here to help out if you guys have any questions.
Yeah. And why don't you give out the website and phone number too?
Sure. It's cleanfireplace.com and you can reach us at 847-918-7994.
Is there a rule of thumb of like how many burns until we should be cleaning it?
Yeah. So a wood burning fireplace, a solid fuel fireplace, about every 36 fires, it should be swept out. And you know, if you're burning, you know, annually, have an inspection. And this is kind of getting back to when was the last time we had it done? If it's been more than 3 years, have us at least inspect it. I mean, a lot of times they don't need to be cleaned, but the inspection portion is the most important portion.
Well, I have a feeling I have an entire family of squirrels living in a high rise chimney in my house.
I hope you're collecting rent.
I'm going to be. When you come out, we're gonna collect, my friend. And if they don't got the cash,
they're out.
My boy over here is going to dispose of whatever's in there. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show, where we pronounce the word chimney any way we'd like to, despite the multiple texters who think I should pronounce it chimney, not chimney.
Chimney, I guess that's your personality, Frank, though. No?
Well, that's my whole thing. Yeah, I get it. If it irks you that I say chimney versus chimney, I don't know. You probably hate the fact that I say gonna instead of going.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm gonna. I'm not
going to.
I'm going to, because that's just not my style. I know it's not correct, but you know what? I'm not correct. I'm not right in the head. If you know me,
I don't think any of us are.
No, right? So I applaud the grammar teachers out there that like to teach me proper ways to say things, and I love you for listening.
I think every head is a world. Every head is one world. So
yeah, my head's
to each his own.
Yeah, my head's all upside down. So is my chimney. Now I'm going to say it on purpose.
How is it, Eric? How would you say it?
Chimney.
Chimney.
How many times have you heard it pronounced?
I hear chimney quite often from customers, I don't correct people. It's however you want to say it.
Yeah, right? It's like tomatoes and tomatoes and potatoes and potatoes. It's one of those things.
You learn something every day.
You do. And now we're going to learn how to winterize your home. At least 10 tips to do so. Eric's hanging out with us for this. You know, you mentioned how the company started as a gutter cleaning company. How important is it for dead tree limbs to be taken away? I think it's a huge thing. Number one, as the most homeowners fail to do before the winter things, is to eliminate dead tree branches. And those things can end up being harmful. They could fall, and once the ice settles and snow on the trees, it can cause a real serious issue. I mean, do you see this when you're out there? Do you urge people when you're on the roof, and you say, you know, I see something. Hey, what are you doing out there, everybody? Good to see you.
It is something, since we are up on roofs and we're literally at the highest portion of your home, that we do see a lot of gutters. And that's, you know, how we got into the chimney industry was from gutter cleaning. So
wait, did you say chimney? I think you just said chimney.
Did I say chimney?
Yes.
He did. Yeah. See, the chimney expert just said it.
It's contagious.
See? That's what I'm saying, man. Say whatever you want.
But, yeah. There's no right way to say it.
There is no right way.
So, yeah. I mean, it's, with us being up there all the time, we do see clogged gutters all the time. I mean, you have everything in there from the springtime of seeds, you know, everything that just rots up there and then just backs everything at that point up. But tree branches, I mean, even too close to your chimney,
sure,
with the winds we've had the last couple of days, they will hit stuff. They will knock covers off. They will hit pipes. So, you know, there's always a good proximity you need to maintain with your tree limbs and your home. But once they do get on there, they're never a benefit to being up on your roof.
And it's best to do it before the snow hits, before it gets super duper cold. And that should be now. And if you're not comfortable, get your landscaper out there to do it quick. You should be doing that fall maintenance thing right about now. All right, next one is be proactive about plumbing. This one's a good one. You got to make sure, and people forget this all the time, shut those spigots off, turn the water lines from the inside out, make sure they're off, or else you're going to be replacing your exterior plumbing all the time. It happened to me, I forgot last season. I just was so busy, didn't think about it. And then the spring hit, and I went to go water the lawn, and all of it was like the pipes were cracked. It didn't. Luckily for me, it didn't burst on the interior of the home. It was more of an exterior crack because water was just sitting in the line. So you want to make sure you drain your lines, shut the valves off from the inside that go to the outside, and you should be okay. The next one we want to talk about is seal leaks. Now, around the chimneys, I mean, is a notorious place for separation to happen, for settling, and you're starting to see leaks around the brick. How do you guys address that?
Well, and that's kind of a good point. I mean, if you ever have a leak that comes within 10 feet of your chimney, the chimney should always be one of the first aspects that you look at to see if the chimney is related, and more often than not, it is either the source of the problem or definitely a contributing factor. So, I mean, you know, we're up there, we're checking out the flashing, making sure the seams are still, you know, correct. Sometimes you get a new roof and they've modified the flashing and the flashing came off, or the original flashing was left and should have been replaced. There are cracks that develop below the top of the crown, but again, there could be appliance lining issues, and that's sure. Where there's such a dynamic to the chimney itself. A lot of people think it's just from my fireplace, but especially around this area where we have a lot of masonry chimneys, your appliances do also vent up through there and can really be a contributing factor to some of those leaks and water staining as well.
Are you seeing any trend in just no fireplaces in homes and reduction in chimneys? Because I know you guys are in the chimney business, but as far as overall, are you seeing any trends moving away?
Well, trends towards gas, direct vent gas fireplaces and kind of diverting away from the traditional rooftop, I'll call it, vented fireplace. So really, it's just more so along the lines of convenience and energy efficiency. So the direct vent fireplaces are typically around 80% efficient appliances, so they will actually provide heat to the home. And that's really, for the most part, where the fireplace industry is trending towards. It's because, I mean, you press a button, it comes on. The systems themselves are pre-engineered, so everything works and, you know, designed in a safe environment. So that's more so the convenience of gas is super attractive, and the flame appearance has really come a long way.
Yeah, the digital fireplaces are really cool. We installed a couple of those.
To each
is that,
own.
Is that your enemy?
That's like chimney versus chimney. I deal with real fireplaces every day, so I think they're extremely hokey. So I'm still towards burning wood, and you know, the gas fireplace appearance has come such a long way.
I don't even mean the gas ones, the digital ones that throw off heat. He's giving me eye daggers. Like, yeah. That's not our business.
Well, and if you see them side by side, there's not a comparison.
All right, let's take a call here. We have hey Troy, what's going on, buddy? Thanks for calling the show.
Good afternoon. Glad to hear you have this on the show. I have a problem I've been dealing with for a number of years. My house is 20 years old, and when they built it, they put where the smoke exits the chimney is at the very same height as our water heater flue. And they're right next to each other. So whenever the water heater isn't running and the water heater flue is cold and I run the fireplace, I get a downdraft that sucks the smoke back into the house.
Very, very common problem. So is it just your water heater that's venting out through that flue currently?
Yes, it is. I've had a high efficiency furnace in the house since we built it.
Now, do you know if it has been relined to just vent that hot water heater? Because it sounds like you have a negative air pressure problem, or this is where as soon as you lose the draft from that water heater, that it reverses and instead of drafting out of the home, drafts back down. And really the fireplace should be above that portion, but you should never have that loss of draft or that reversal of the draft down your appliance flue, where when the water heater's not operating, that it, it's essentially cold, pulling cold air down there. And that is something else that homeowners can look at too. On most water heaters, there are plastic rings that are right around the inlet and outlet pipes. And when those melt, it's an indication that there is a draft problem with the water heater, where the draft is actually supposed to be going up, but it will melt those plastic rings when it overheats from an incorrect draft. But it sounds like you have a negative air pressure issue kind of combined with an incorrect height for your wood burning fireplace that needs to be addressed. So is it just a negative air pressure problem? I couldn't tell you without seeing it, but if it's most water heaters around 40,000 BTU, so it should have a 3 or 4 inch lining in there. So if it was originally designed to accommodate a furnace and then it wasn't, and there was always a high efficiency in there, there may also be some incorrect sizing with the lining for your water heater as well.
Okay.
Troy, where do you live?
Out in Geneva.
Out in Geneva. You guys cover Geneva?
We go to Geneva.
So why don't you just give Eric a call, and he can maybe get you set up and at least get a visit out there, maybe help you out.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. We actually need to get it. We've never had our chimney cleaned, so we probably need to.
All right, cool. Well, why don't you give out the website real quick?
It's cleanfireplace.com or 847-918-7994.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Troy. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Well, good stuff, man. This has been fun. Appreciate your visit on the show and you hanging out with us. And before you leave, we have one last text come in, which is kind of funny, from the 331, talking about chimney. How about chimley? Did you ever hear that? That's have you heard that one?
I have heard it. That's one of the least I hear, but I think I've heard it all.
So it's her. This is the texture's
My chimney?
Has my chimney? Yeah, it's my best pest peep. Or when Chicago's should be say Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah. All right, I like it. A lot of incorrect people out there. I love you for it. What is the most annoying thing? Annoying word that people pronounce that you just can't stand? I'd love to know that. And we'll talk about it. Dave, do you have one?
I definitely do. When people say jewels instead of jewel.
Like for jewel
Osco? It irks me, yeah.
But I could see that one, because if you're shortening it, it's jewels. I'm going to jewels, right?
Yeah.
Or jewel. Yeah, I guess you're right, because what would you say, jewel? I'm going to the jewel.
Yeah. There's certain words that really...
What is your most annoying word that people butcher, like I did for chimney? And I love just repeating.
Maybe the gardeners have a pet peeve word.
I know. I'm excited about
that. And they're master gardeners.
Not just any gardener, master gardeners. We're being joined right now with a team here from U of I Extension Honors Program, the Kane County Master Gardeners. Joining me is Linda Kanush. Am I saying that right?
It's
Kunish. See, I told you I was going to screw it up, didn't I?
And I'm actually from DuPage County.
And from DuPage County, from Carroll Stream, right?
Correct.
All right. And then we got Richard Henschel for the University of Illinois Extension Program. Currently serves as the horticulture educator for DuPage, Kane, and Kendall counties. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we also have one other guest. We have Patty Hirsch of Elgin.
That's correct. Hi,
see,
Frank.
I did one out of three. Two. Not too bad. All right, so let's start with Richard. Richard, tell us about the program.
Well, it's a voluntary program for anyone interested in becoming a master gardener. They receive about 60 hours of training, and those areas are vegetable gardening, insects and control, tree fruit, small fruits. We talk about lawns or turf grass care, plant diseases, tree and shrub care is a big part, and also soils and fertility.
What makes you a professor? Like, where did you start?
Where did I start? I graduated from the University of Illinois with a bachelor's in ornamental horticulture, and I followed that up with a master's in horticulture with a focus on plant physiology, plant pathology.
And as a kid, did you always knew you wanted to do this?
Pretty much. Grandpa was in the nursery business. My dad was in the nursery business. And of the six family children, I'm the one that stuck with it.
Awesome. And now you're educating people.
And that's right.
And this program is all about education and volunteerism, right?
Absolutely. The Master Gardener Program and its kind of sister program, the Master Naturalist, it's all about volunteers. The time they spend learning in the classes is their volunteer time. That all the hours that they put in returning to the program, and that's part of it. They receive this amazing amount of education. And in lieu of tuition and fees and things of that sort, they volunteer their time back into the program, and they answer questions at the office. They answer questions at help desks throughout the counties. We might be at a farmer's market. We might be at library activities or library programming that they put on in the community.
So it's really not about going there to get this education to then start your own nursery, right?
Not at all. It's all about sharing your knowledge with other interested gardeners, other interested homeowners that are new to gardening, that are really having that tough time maybe growing that first vegetable garden, and they just need to get the story straight, and we help them teach them how to grow.
How is the trend in gardening right now? Because I could see it. You know, everyone's into Pinterest, into, you know, Howls and Instagram and all these accounts. And you're seeing a lot of these home gardeners, you know, creating urban gardens and branching it off from, you know, your traditional, you know, backdrop of a backyard or a landscape into an urban setting. Are you seeing, how are you guys accommodating for that role, if you are?
There's a lot of generational interest these days in gardening. These concerns about what's on it, are we eating it, and the genetically modified story that's out there. So people, when they grow their own vegetables, their own fruits, they know exactly what they've grown and what they've put on it, if they've sprayed anything at all.
Sure, and it seems to me like a cultural thing. Like it's a you know, Gen X had its thing, and you know, Generation Y, and I feel like today it's accountability, like where you're saying it's people want to know like what they're putting in their body, and they're healthier, they're more educated on it.
Right.
So having your own gardens and your own herb gardens are really popular, and I'm seeing them on balconies. Do you talk about this in the educational program?
Absolutely, and we do a lot of balcony gardening with apartment dwellers and condo and town homeowners.
See, I would think that would strike a chord here in Chicago, yeah, you know, yeah. Big time with folks who live in apartments and condos.
And the technology is really ramped up. We've got containers now that have water reservoirs in them, so that all you got to remember to do is keep the reservoir full of water and not worry about whether the plant needs to be watered or not. The plant will take up the water as it needs it when it wants it. So
I need that. I'm not a good gardener. I got to be honest with you.
The other things that are out there now, we used to have to garden in, you know, good old garden dirt, if you will, the soil.
Yeah. Yeah,
but when you've got container gardens now, what you're growing in is really a man-made set of nutritional elements that are out there that we don't have dirt. And when you don't have that, then you leave a lot of the pathogens
sure.
that are naturally occurring in dirt behind, so you don't have a lot of those disease issues as you grow your
yeah.
as you grow your vegetables in containers. The containers themselves are different. So
it's not your grandma's gardening anymore.
Not when you're talking about container gardening.
No flowered gloves. I mean, this is like, you know, today's gardener. I dig it. I like it.
I won't tell you how many pairs of flower gloves I have.
And your pink-handled...
And my pink-handled tools.
I got you. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I got a couple myself. I'm not afraid to admit it. So, Patsy, what drove you to the program?
I've been a lifelong gardener, and I also do have many flowered gloves at home.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I do. Purple and pink. So I grew up on a farm, and my last of three children was headed off to college, and I was always told, make sure you have something to fill the void. So I had always read about master gardening in the newspaper, so I decided that that's the route that I was going to do, because I could make up, you know, do my own hours, and I knew it was a volunteer program, so that's what drove me there.
And has it been fulfilling for you?
More so than I can say. It's been absolutely fabulous. I have learned so much about my own yard and realized how many mistakes I've made in my own yard, and wondering why my tomato plant died, and, you know, how I can do to slow diseases down. And so, yeah, personally, it's been great growth, and not to mention also with my plants, too.
Well, what would you say for folks listening was your number one wake-up call to, like, oh, God, I was doing this wrong the whole time. Like, it was so silly. It was so simple.
Disease cleanup, making sure that when I see disease starting on the plants, to do that, to clean up the leaves and things that fall.
The proper maintenance of it.
Right, the proper maintenance. And soil. Soil is really huge. If you don't have good soil, you don't have a good garden.
See, really, like, you know, you say that when the leaves fall and you have to clean up, I always was in the mindset of, like, in nature... I'm probably wrong. I know I'm wrong. But in nature, trees, you know, shed their leaves, and you know, plants shed their leaves and whatever, and it just gets eaten up in the soil, becomes food. Am I wrong?
Well, not wrong in the sense of exactly what you said. As they decompose, they return, they recycle. They're there for the next generation of plants. What Patsy's probably referring to, though, and is when you have a tomato plant that has all these diseased leaves on the lower portion or falling on the ground. If you leave them there, that just is inoculum to float back up and get the rest of the foliage for the rest of the summer. So by keeping the garden clean in terms of disease sanitation, you lessen the severity of the problem.
And now we're going to meet Linda from Carroll Stream. Linda, tell us a little bit about why you signed up for the program.
Well, I think I've always been interested in gardening, and I love the idea that it was a volunteer organization. My background was in education. I was a teacher and a school principal, so it just seemed like a perfect thing to do when you retire.
I'm sure. And what have you done with the knowledge you've gotten?
I would say that we have really done a tremendous job at the DuPage Convalescent Center. We work with about 55 resident gardeners. There are about 34 master gardeners on my team. We help them from everything from plant selection to growing to maintaining to harvesting.
Did you have a green thumb before this?
Not really. I really didn't.
Me
no.
Either. I feel
and
better
in fact,
about that.
Yeah, and I don't do any houseplants inside because I will kill everyone.
Good. Look,
but
see,
outside
that makes me feel
better.
Better.
Yeah,
I do
better.
Kill a lot of plants. I'm sorry to say that. Well, and now do you feel more confident? I mean, do you still not take an interior plant?
I still don't do an interior plant.
Wow,
no.
Look at you.
No, I would much rather be outside.
Yeah, it's good for your soul.
It is.
I think, yeah.
Let's
talk about that a little bit. What on a deeper level does this mean for all of you?
Well, our project is primarily focused on improving the quality of life of people who live in a long-term care facility. And so that really is the heart and soul of everything that we do.
And how do you feel and why do you think a great garden can do that for somebody?
Oh, my goodness. It gives them an opportunity to not have to worry about their physical limitations, their needs, their issues. They get to be out with nature. They get to plant and harvest their own produce, their own flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And do you think, you feel like, I'm going to get deep on you for a second, on a quantum level, do you feel like there's a connection with what you're doing and bringing this color and this vibrancy and this life to them?
Absolutely, because many of the residents actually gardened many years ago with their mothers or grandmothers, although the Convalescent Center serves people as young as their late teens. So for some of them, they're actually just learning how to garden for the first time.
That's awesome.
It is.
And it's probably the main driver for what you're doing, right?
It really is.
That's great.
Thank you.
And so why did you do this? I mean, like, where are you at with this all? What organizations are you working with?
I'm working with Advocate Sherman Hospital in Elgin. And 11 years ago, we started a program there where we wanted to teach people how to grow their own food. And then so what we did was we researched donors and then we plunked down 48 garden beds in the middle of a refurbished prairie on the property.
Oh, cool.
It used to be former farmland. And then we in came the gardeners. It's like that thing where you build it, they come.
Yeah.
And so ever since then, we're starting our seventh year of gardening. And our garden beds, we always have a waiting list there. And our thing is to reconnect people with their own food. We have the hospitals involved with through physical therapy, and also the dietary provides recipes that are appropriate to what's growing in the garden.
Wow, that's great.
Right. And then so the master gardeners are also in the garden, helping them, the gardeners, helping them through mistakes with spacing or with disease control and things like that. So we've developed a teaching garden.
That's fantastic. I love where this program takes people. And we actually have a call from Susan. Hey, Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi. I listen all the time.
Thank you.
And I used to live in an apartment, and now I live in an assisted facility. And I have a rubber tree plant, and it used to get a lot of sun, but now the window it's in isn't very big, and I don't get a lot of sunlight. And the biggest leaves I have are about a foot long.
Wow. I'm
like, this sucker's huge.
Yeah.
But since the plant hasn't been getting a lot of sun, I've been losing a couple of the leaves, and I want to know what I can do with now winter coming, and I won't get half the sun that I used to get in this poor plant.
Richard,
I don't know what to do.
We'll help you out here. Richard's got the knowledge that could maybe save your plant.
Okay, so some of those leaves, what you can expect out of that rubber plant now would be that it's going to kind of stretch and get more spindly and kind of grow towards the light. The lower interior leaves are most likely going to just fall off naturally because there's not enough energy, there's not enough sunlight to keep all those leaves alive.
Yeah, some already did.
Right, and at some point you might notice that you're going to get one brand new leaf and you're going to lose a leaf. That's just because that's all the foliage the plant can host. That's all the leaves that can be maintained by that plant given the amount of sunlight that's coming in that smaller window. And you're right, the wind,
okay.
And the sun in the wintertime is going to be less, so don't fertilize it. Slow up on the watering. Because there's just no energy there to benefit from any fertilizer, and you don't want to waterlog the soil because it's very difficult to get it dried out in the wintertime.
How about synthetic light? Can Susan use some kind of synthetic light for it?
If she can supplement what comes in from the window with incandescent bulbs, with fluorescent tubes, the new LED fixtures that are out on the market.
So get like a lamp and then...
Sure.
Is there a special kind of lamp? Because we're on fixed income. I only get $90 a month.
Right. No, not anything special. If you're going to use a regular incandescent bulb, that generates heat. So make sure it's far enough away from the plant you don't burn any foliage. Fluorescent lights will work. The new LED lights would work
in
your budget.
Yeah, take an existing lamp if you have one and just switch out the bulb, take the shade off every a couple hours a day, and I think that would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah, any additional wattage will help.
What would be a good wattage?
Well, the more wattage, the better, but then that also generates more heat, so you got to be careful about burning the leaves. But an incandescent bulb provides the reds and the oranges that the sun provides, and that'll help balance out the limited sunlight that's coming through the window.
Awesome.
Okay, because I had this plant since it was a seedling.
Yep, that's always nice to keep them a long, long time.
It's like
time.
Your child, I get it.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, in fact, her name is Lily.
Well, hi, Lily. Thanks for listening, too. We want to keep you alive. Susan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, you got it. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
All right, this has been fun. I really enjoyed it, guys. Thank you so much. Patsy, Linda, Richard, you guys are awesome. Richard, if someone's listening and they want to learn more about the program, where can they go?
Well, we've, like the rest of the world, we now have a website. It's web.extension.illinois.edu/DKK, and the DKK stands for DuPage, Kane, and Kendall Counties. But there's lots of listeners here today, and they all don't live in the suburbs. There's a master gardening program almost in every county, of which there's 102 of in the state. Cook County has a very large, impressive master gardener program as well. So if you go to University of Illinois state site, you can find any county you want, and you click on it, and you'll have access to names, emails, and phone numbers.
Excellent. Thank you all for coming in. We appreciate it, and continue the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. Yeah, it's time for some of my favorite things. But before we do that, some of your favorite, well, I guess least favorite words that people say and butcher, your pet peeves, like, let's see here, all these texts coming in from, the 815. Irregardless and conversate drive me crazy. Also being asked, hey, can you borrow me $5? I get that a lot. That's a South Side thing, I think. And then pet peeve words here, prostrate and mammogram and oncology instead of prostate, mammogram, and oncology. Yes, I'm a cancer nurse. That's coming from the 630. Saying axe instead of ask. What the heck is so hard about that? Ask. OMG, says the 630. The word basically said way too much. That's coming from the 815. This all started with the word chimney. So if you have some pet peeve words that people say all funky and you don't like it and you want to air it out, let's do it. 312-981-7200. In the meantime, let's talk to Chris Clearman about this product called the Pocket Blanket. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for having me on.
Chris, before we go into this, what's your pet peeve word that people butcher?
Oh, man, I think they covered it with the axe.
Axe. So let me ask you a question, Chris. What the heck is a pocket blanket?
The pocket blanket is the seating surface that you can take with you anywhere. It fits in your pocket, backpack, purse. It's about the size of a wallet, and you can unfold it to be a seating surface for up to four people. So if you're the kind of person that spends time outside, goes to festivals, concerts, that kind of thing, kids' soccer games, a really handy thing to just have on you all the time.
Which is, everybody needs one of these. I'm holding it in my hand, the Matador. Put yourself out there. I like it. but here's my fear, right? I'm not a good folder. Am I going to open this thing up and enjoy it? And then am I going to really be able to fold this thing back to its pocket size? Like, talk to me about this.
That's a great question. We get that all the time. It's probably our most common issue that people bring out. And we actually solved that before we launched it in the first place. So sewn in, there's a series of lines we call the Easy Pack pattern. And all you have to do is fold on those lines and it'll go right back into its little pouch.
Wait, so there's lines. So if I open this up right now, because I purposely am keeping it in the package. You can hear me. Listen, I'm literally opening it up. I'm going to do this. You're going to talk me through this so that our listeners can understand here. So what I'm holding, folks, is this pocket blanket from Matador. And Chris, did you create this or do you work for the company?
No, I'm the founder of the company. So I did originally create it. Yeah, that was our first product. And then we've gone from there. We have a whole line of kind of packable adventure gear. So now
Dave and I have an ongoing bet that you invented this for Green Berets in the military so that they can keep themselves warm. Okay, you do have lines
on here. It's not really for warmth. Mostly just for sitting on.
No
Green Berets this time.
No Green Berets. But it'd be a good story if you just work it in there.
It would be. Yeah, I should just go with it next time.
All right, so I'm looking at the grid right now, okay? And mm-hmm. I have it open. I have it in half. If you want to catch this online, you can go to wgnradio.com/watch, and you can see what I'm doing right now. And so, okay, I follow it, and then I fold it back in half, right? And then I got a series of little boxes.
Sure.
So what do I do with the little boxes? Just keep going?
You don't even have to worry about the little boxes. So you folded it in half on the first red line.
Yep.
Now find the next red line that divides it in half and fold it on that one. And then do it again and again and again. Just keep folding on those lines progressively.
See, Chris, you sold me right now. Because now I was able to put it back together in real time on the radio as I'm talking to you. Now the true test is, can I stuff it back in that little sack? That's going to be the test.
Yeah, there we go.
We're folding. Somehow I have lost the sack. That doesn't sound right, but I have.
Did you fold it up in there?
I folded it all up in there. That's a common problem. I see. There it is. Okay, yeah. You know what? Even if I didn't make it all the way in, it still goes to a pretty small size. And I would say, for having two kids, this would be ultra convenient to just keep, like my wife's purse or something. Hey, you know what?
Yeah, it's great.
Chris, I have mm-hmm. it in the sack. I have received the sack, and I've inserted it in the sack. So we are perfect. Right. Exactly. It sounds very dirty, but it's not. Look, it's not dirty.
Not at all.
It's a blanket. I'm inserting a blanket in a sack. Cool, man.
It kept you clean, It's waterproof. It keeps the insects off, so.
Yeah, so I mean, like really waterproof. So if it's raining out and I'm in a hurry and I got this in my bag, I can throw this over my head and I'm not going to get soaked.
Yeah, you can definitely do that, and I've done that more times than I can count. So,
and puncture resistant.
Really the intended use, but yeah, it's a high tech ripstop fabric we call hyperlight nylon. So if you look really close, you can see this little grid pattern in the gray fabric.
I do see it.
Each one of those grids is made by a super strong nylon thread and. That gives it a lot of robustness. So
let me guess, were you like a cliff jumper or something? Like, how did you discover this material, and why did you create this?
I used to live out in San Francisco, and we'd go to, Dolores Park and sit in the sun on the nice days, if there were sunny days, and Golden Gate Park, whatnot. And you always had to carry either a chair or a huge blanket, and you'd have to ride the bike with this giant blanket, so I just kind of wanted something that I could sit on that would just fit in my pocket. So I started researching materials and kind of came up with some stuff they were using for other applications and then a series of coatings that would kind of get it to where I wanted it to be and then had it custom manufactured for our needs.
And how's the business going for you? I mean, I love to hear these startup stories.
Yeah, it's doing great. So we're a bootstrapped startup, and we've been running for about 2.5 years now. If you can jump on the website, you can see we've got 12 or 15 kind of packable adventure products now, and they're all doing great. So
fantastic. And what is that website address?
It's www.matadorup.com.
Matadorup.com. And you folks, go on there now, check out what I'm talking about. These are neat products. What's the price point on this pocket blanket?
The pocket blanket's $25.
$25, that's not bad. I mean, I would easily pay for that. I mean, that's great. Well, good stuff, Chris. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on the show. Again, the website's matadorup.com, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Chris, good stuff, man. Keep the inventions coming. I like it. It was a very, very fun process, too. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks.
All right, Chris. Let's see here. We're going to take some more of these texts coming in. And the words that most give you the EBGBs, like what do people say that bother you the most, that just peeve you, right? Like the word peeve. So some of them, before we take this break here, more text coming in from 312. Nuclear, often pronounced nuclear when the word is nuclear. Okay, see, it's really individual what bothers people. I especially can't stand when people say especially, EX, right? Another one here says, happy Thanksgiving. My mother always used to pronounce cardboard as cowboard. Drives me crazy, from the 708. I hear you. Then there's from the 847, Pacific instead of specific. You know, I think these are very regional things.
You know, some people say Italians, and it really catches my ear when I
Does
hear
it bother
that
you?
Italians.
I'm a full-blooded 100% Italian. But I feel like Italian is, it reminds me of the movie Rocky, where the announcer's like, the Italian stallion. Yeah, that bothers me too.
Some people, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but it really catches me. I'm like, how is it? Like, maybe like Caribbean and Caribbean as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. And here's another one here before the break. Also, everything is unpacked nowadays in school meetings when we're looking at objectives. Hold on, where'd that go? We got a bunch of texts just came in and shot that one down. We're never discussing them. We unpack them. Unpacking is for suitcases. I don't understand. People, this really drives people crazy, man. I love it. How about supposedly, not supposedly, realtor versus realtor? Oh, this can go on for days. We can do a whole show on this, dude.
Oh, my God. We're getting a call, but she doesn't want to go on the air, and she's talking about how President Bush would always say nuclear. How did you say it?
Nuclear.
Yeah, like that. And she says that her pet peeve is, or her word that really irks her is, instead of saying jewelry, a jewelry.
Jeweler, yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I think we have way too much time on our hands to care about how people say things. And we are in studio right now with John Pascavan, who is the chain accounts manager for Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits of Illinois. John, thanks for bringing alcohol.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Yeah, it's not so much thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for bringing alcohol, John. Biggest pet peeve word?
Oh, Joliet. Joliet versus Joliet drives me crazy. Or Soldier Field versus Soldier's Field.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty common one. But when you're drinking alcohol, it doesn't really matter, right?
Doesn't really matter, because every word at some point is going to get blurred.
Exactly. There's your excuse, Chicago. And we have just floods of texts coming in, which makes me think this is a good topic, Dave. We should be talking about this further, because it's very important that people voice their opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
What words bother them.
Oh, I can imagine.
We could do hours of that.
Hours on that one.
Yeah, like... let's see here. Just, I'm a little off topic here.
You know, but everything sounds better when you have a nice little cocktail. Everything will sound a lot better, and nothing bothers you when you have something to drink.
Like, here's a good one. One of our sponsors here, Lou Malnati's, instead of Lou Malnati's. It's Lou Malnati's. How do you say it, John?
Lou Malnati's.
Lou Malnati's, right. Malnati's?
Not Malnati's.
But it's like if you're Italian and you say ricotta, which is the proper way to say ricotta, or... Ricotta.
Ricotta.
I want to hit people with a pan when they say ricotta. I think it's it's wrong. It's an abomination of the word. All right, so let's talk drinks here. Holidays are coming. You got an array of alcohol in front of me, starting with one of my personal favorites, the Moscow Mule. What goes into a homemade Moscow Mule?
Well, we just brought in a couple simple ones for you because we know the holidays can get complicated, right?
Yes.
And so we start out with a couple light cocktails. The first one you have in front of you is the Grey Goose Moscow Mule. And once again, it's kind of the simple recipe. 1.5 parts Grey Goose vodka and 3 parts of ginger beer. And throw in a little lime wedge and some ice, stir it, and you're ready to go.
And what if I'm on a diet and I want this?
If you're on a diet, we can help you with that. They also have diet ginger beer. A few less calories, same great taste.
All right, and the lime helps burn calories because it's citrus. Yeah, we could work this
Gives
out.
It a little bit more taste, too, at the top. So,
John, we could spin this any which way we want. We could make this healthy.
Well, we could. We can find ways to make it
this
healthy.
This drink could save your life.
It could. Well, we always claim, we always laugh in our business saying that, you know, we don't save lives, but at this time of the year, we feel we do because of all the holiday parties and fighting that could go on.
Of course.
You know, over the turkey leg, over politics, anything.
Right. Soften, especially politics this time of year. Jeez. All right. You got a Jim Beam and ginger ale. This is pretty basic here, yeah?
Another simple one. You know, it's just a one part Jim Beam, three parts of ginger ale. And for those of you watching your calories, you can do a diet ginger ale. And it has the same great taste. Pour into a glass.
I'm not much of a Jim Beam guy, but I'm going to give this a shot. Hoo-ha. Yeah. That'll put hair on your chest.
Yes, it will.
I don't need much more hair on my chest, to be honest with you. I'm going to stick with the Moscow Mule. All right, so now let's switch gears to something really timely, the Cubby Blue Shot. What am I? I'm holding this Cubby Blue-looking formula in my hand. What is it?
And that is as simple as it can get. It is three parts of rum chata liqueur and one part of blue carousel, just for a little taste and a little color, in honor of the Cubs.
Let's see, in honor of the Cubs. Cheers. Tasty. What is blue curacao? What is it made of?
It's just a simple liqueur that is used for mixing cocktails, much like you use triple sec in a margarita, just to give it a little more taste, a little flavor. Really, you're just giving it a little bit more color.
Got it. We got some texts coming in, John, that are asking, is ginger beer a soda or is it an alcoholic beverage?
It is. It's a non-alcoholic beverage. A lot of people get confused that it's an actual beer. It's actually in the mixer section of most stores you find. It's non-alcoholic, just like any other mixers.
So if I was just to drink a ginger beer, it's not what we're thinking. It's not what you're thinking. It's not going to get me blasted.
Not at all. There's no alcohol. Majority of the stores, you'll find it in like the mixer and soda aisle.
Okay. And this last one you have for me here, it looks like dessert.
This last one would be the dessert. We stuck with the rum chata theme, pumpkin pie martini. And it's two parts of rum chata, and one part we used absolute vanilla vodka, and then a little bit of pumpkin pie syrup. One part of pumpkin pie syrup, and then a little cinnamon on top of it. Shaken, and then poured into a nice cocktail, martini glass, whatever you prefer. Mm-hmm. That one would be a little bit more heavy calories. That one I can't go diet on you.
Ooh, that one's dessert right there. That's good. So when you say, is it dense calories? And we're talking like several hundreds of calories in this little cup?
At least a couple hundred calories, yes.
So if I was to skip my tiramisu after my dinner, this would be a good option?
We have you covered.
That it actually tastes like a tiramisu a little
it does.
Bit.
It does taste a little bit like tiramisu, and that cinnamon really brings a nice flavor to the top of the cocktail.
This is fantastic. So tell me about Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits.
Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits, we're one of the largest distributors in the state of Illinois and across the country. We're in roughly 44 states, so we've pretty much cover every supplier that's out there in some form or fashion, and we service all the retail and on-premise accounts throughout the state and across the country.
So your Jewels, your big retail outlets.
Yep.
Minis.
Everything, from the chain grocery stores to the independent liquor stores to your favorite corner tavern, we have it covered.
Awesome, man. This is good stuff. Good recommendations for the holidays, too. I feel like the rum chata pumpkin is a perfect holiday drink.
You nailed
it with this one.
Oh, that one, it couldn't be more perfect timing. I mean, you tie it in with the Cubby Blue maybe to start your festive, work your way through, through the other two cocktails, which are a little bit lighter, and then finish off heavy with the heavy rum chata.
And do you guys have a website where people can find more information about
it? We don't have it as far as drinks go, but there's some great ones out there like bartender.com, webtender.com. If you're just looking for cocktail solutions, you can punch in the cocktail you're looking for or the ingredients you want to use, and it'll give you the recipe.
Have you ever tried Charles Jolie's Craft House Moscow Mule?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
It's pretty good. We used to distribute that a while ago. It's a pretty good cocktail.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
For one of the pre-made ones, it's probably one of the best.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's good. You're the best, John. I appreciate it, man. Anybody who brings alcohol on the show is a good guest. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and enjoy the holidays. I'm going to actually take these recipes with me and bring it on to the family.
You got it. Well, hope you have a great holiday, Frank, and thanks for having me.